grumpy old geeks, two old farts, a microphone, and the internet. What could go wrong?
Hey, Jason.
So did you remember to write down your show notes for this week?
I did, actually. I did.
By hand?
No, not by hand, which is why this podcast always kind of suck, because I'm struggling to remember things.
Because a long time ago, we talked about writing notes down by hand mm-hmm. makes you remember them longer.
Yes.
And you have, I notice in our show notes, brought up the same topic again. So that's why I ask, did you maybe not write it down?
Well, I do remember we talked about this, because this is when you were bringing up a myriad of apps that you were using. And I said, I just love my Moleskins and use that all the time. We did talk about that, but I don't believe that I actually had science to back me up. Science!
So and, now you have science.
And now there is science. An article came out that was listed on Lifehacker. Which actually went through it, and if you do, it has now been scientifically proven that you will actually have better memory of things if you write them out by hand, which of course makes utter sense because our entire biology and evolution, which some of you people don't believe up until this point, has favored such things as opposed to just beep, 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 beep.
Yeah.
So, okay. So there's actual science about it. If you really want to be able to remember things, you write it down.
The problem is I haven't written anything in so long I won't be able to read it.
Well,
my handwriting sucks.
That is a completely separate issue.
Yeah, my handwriting is terrible. I couldn't even – I've had to write in cursive. Forget it.
Jesus. I can't even remember the last time I've done anything in cursive. I mean, even my signature is kind of devolved into this scrawl now.
Oh, yeah. I kind of – based mine on Disney's the D, and then the rest of it is just a line. I gave up. I got like 10 letters in my last name, so I just make it a line.
You're talking to a Schulmeister. I think I gave up even printing my name in kindergarten.
That's true. Jesus.
It's just too damn hard.
Speaking of science, I want to bring up a Stanford study. Or was it Stanford that did the study? Yes, Stanford did the study. Stanford printed the study. But apparently walking will increase your creative output by an average of 60%, even if it's on a treadmill. Doesn't even have to be out in the great blue yonder. It's where I do all my walking as outside because, you know, well, before that is, I
when
lost
you, when
the ability
you could walk.
To walk. Yes. I'm working my way back to it slowly but surely, and I'm really excited to be able to get back out there because it's spring is here, and I just noticed that when I don't walk, man, I just turn into a vegetable. My brain stops working. It shrivels up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this also – I think this basically just applies to any sort of physical activity in the outdoors is good for you. Just taking your brain and unplugging it for a while, because I do my bike rides every day, which isn't walking. But when I'm out and I'm doing my ride, things just kind of flow. Like I kind of almost hit this like zen-like state and – I'm vaguely thinking about work and I'm coming up with cool ideas, and that seems to always be where it happens. It's never when I'm just sitting here at my desk. It's when I unplug and get away from things for a while. You need to, you know, let the brain do its thing, man.
Yeah, I try not to do that while I'm riding a bike because I'm not that good at riding a bike, and I don't want to. I don't want to pull a Sonny Bono and run into a tree.
Gotcha. So well, I've been riding my same path along the beach, watching the dolphins leap out into the water, and well. The only issue with that is when it's bikini season, as it's been this week. We have not talked about the weather, so let me just briefly mention, it has been a massive heat wave here in California. We're talking 90 degrees here at the beach. So the only chance I have of death and not being creative when I'm riding is when all the bikini glad ladies are out there.
Are they? But do they have their YouTube cameras out making videos and selfies and all that?
Inevitably, yes. It's all about that because we're all narcissistic fucks now.
Exactly. Oh, speaking of, did you hear my podcast on the tech douchebags? How narcissistic and douchey was I? Because I still haven't listened to it.
I did listen to it. I actually think that you were fighting to not be, well, you narcissistic or douchey, and he was pushing you towards admitting that you are. But his point was that everybody is now, which is, you know, obvious and kind of the same point. I find it ironic that he wanted you to push you into saying that the only reason you're doing a podcast is to become famous when he's got a podcast as well. So, you know, point well taken, I guess. I thought you came off rather well. I enjoyed listening to you. It was fun.
Excellent. Well, that's good. It's really good since we do a podcast together.
Exactly.
If you hated listening to me, then this would be a really like horrible 2 hours every week.
Yeah, it was too bad that wasn't live because I was going to call in and go, if we were really trying to be famous, we would have gave up about 6 months ago because it ain't working.
Yeah, our tens of listeners. And
Yeah. So, yeah, good job, man.
Appreciate it. Preach, as the kids say.
Preach. And speaking of media and people that actually are famous, and or at least people that are certainly about to become extremely famous because this is Grumpy Old Geeks and all Grumpy Old Geeks love Star Wars. This week, the Episode 7 cast was announced with a nice little photo of them doing their first table read.
The picture is really cool. I didn't look at the who's in the cast yet because I really – my hopes are so in the dirt with this one. I lived through Episode 1 and the sadness that came with that. So indeed. I'm waiting. Misa going to wait. But the picture was really good. It looked like it was out of the 70s. It was black and white and they had R2 in a crate behind them.
Yeah. It was good. I'm so out of the loop now as far as young talent goes and what might be going on in Hollywood. I don't recognize any of the new actors or actresses. They could be somewhat famous. They might be on, you know, a Glee show or some Disney thing that I'm totally not aware of. They could be from One Tree Hill. Oh, that's even from a long time ago, and I don't even know the people that were on that. I don't know these people, so I'm looking forward to not knowing them.
Is there anyone from Dawson's Creek?
I don't believe so, but you know, it was good to see. I think almost everybody was in that photo. I didn't see Harrison Ford. Maybe he was in there. Maybe he wasn't. A lot of jokes have been flying around about this. I'm keeping my mind open because Lucas is not directing it, so who knows? But we all know that if it sucks, he's going to be known as Jar Jar Abrams, not J.J. Abrams.
Oh, didn't even think of that one.
Yeah, that was the one that I came up with. And then there was a lot of I love you, Carrie Fisher. I love you to death. But there's a lot of really good jokes about how Lucas immediately barked out, put all the gold bikinis back in storage.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
In other sad J.J. Abrams news, Almost Human got canceled. I was really bummed about that.
You know, you mentioned it a while ago, said you really liked it. I never got around to watching it. And this is why I staunchly stick by I will not start watching a show until they're in their second or third season.
I had another friend that said that. And that is just the dumbest thing because it's never going to get to a second season if nobody watches it. it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, I'm not going to let the world rest on me and my viewership. I am going to wait and make sure that the show does well and I don't get all invested. And then I feel the way that you do all the time when all the shows that you like get canceled.
Here's the deal. I'm never going to get invested in Fox or the Sci-Fi Channel ever again. HBO gets a pass because they kind of – they've got Entourage.
They got quality.
They had Entourage, and I stuck with them till the end. And the Entourage movie's coming out.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones, I can still take or leave. I watch it every week because it's like – it's sadness porn. I just – you know, my friends watch it. It's here at the house. We have a little party and, you know, yay when somebody gets killed, whatever. It is what it is. But, you know, HBO just fucked us with Deadwood, and I still haven't gotten over that. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I got you. But there you go. I just won't do it. I'm not getting into a show until I know that it's going to stick around for a long time.
Yeah, there's no guarantee because look at Deadwood, you know, and Farscape. They were all in they had one season to go and then they got cut because of stupid budgetary shit. Anyway, let's get off the TV thing. I've talked about this on too many other shows. You can go back and listen to me rant about it there if you're so inclined, which you probably aren't. And I've already turned off the fucking podcast.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I'll rant a little bit at Facebook because I was pissed off at it earlier this week. I've already gotten over it.
if you're already over it, this isn't going to be a very vehement rant.
No, it's not going to be a very vehement rant. I mean, I've accepted Facebook for what it is now. I've defended it ages and, you know, time and time again on this podcast. I think I'm one of the only people out there in, like, at least within this technorati realm that, like, goes, I like Facebook. Everybody else is pissed off about it and hates it all the time. I love it. I love the fact that it keeps me in touch with friends far and wide. I've got friends all over the place. And, you know, I'm not a kind of guy that, like, picks up the phone and calls and let's have a chat. I just don't do that. So for me, this is perfect. I can see what they're up to. I don't even need to talk to them. But
yeah. What the fuck did they do this time?
They just keep fucking around with their algorithms. And I've noticed like a significant decrease in seeing any updates from friends that I don't actually interact with ever. Even if I keep resetting it to most recent because it always fucking changes it. It's just they've gotten to the point where I'm not even seeing any updates on people unless I actually go to their pages themselves. So what's the fucking point?
Exactly. And this is what I've been saying is coming, and now you're seeing it.
Yeah, but here's the difference. And a friend of the show, Sean Bonner, sent out some tweets about this recently about how, you know, Facebook is – the only reason people aren't leaving Facebook is laziness. And I disagree. Facebook has critical mass, and there isn't a viable alternative to go to. There just isn't yet.
Yeah. No, there's been a market opportunity here for quite some time, but yeah, everybody's been making money off of using Facebook instead of building another Facebook. But now the time is ready. It's ripe for somebody to come in and start to like try and whittle away at it.
Yeah.
But it's I mean, it is such a juggernaut, and it works so well most of the time. Mm-hmm. That the infrastructure alone is just ungodly huge to do something like Facebook.
Yeah.
You mentioned in our little behind the scenes notes, like, how hard would it be? Really fucking hard. It really would be to do a global social network like this, just from the traffic standpoint. But this is why you start small and you have different value propositions. I mean, hell, man, let's bring back Ning. Let's resurrect Ning. Small private social networks, or was it Path?
Yeah.
No, I tried Path again lately. It's still a piece of shit.
They're just really – I agree. There is a market opportunity there. If there was something similar to Facebook that kind of stepped back, I'd say, about 10 updates from Facebook 10 steps ago, people would probably switch to that. There is the laziness factor, but there really isn't a viable alternative. So it's not just laziness. It's not just a critical mass issue. It's that really there isn't anything else out there that's quite like it.
Well, there are. Here's the funny part. They are, but they're not in English. They're in Chinese and they're in Russian.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Yeah.
Oh, did they ever kill – what was the one that Google did that was down in Brazil? It was big in Brazil. Oh. What was the name of that one?
I can't remember because I briefly toyed with looking into all of those because, bans are global properties. But then you realize how insular all those are, and they really are just for that country. So,
yeah. Orkut.
Oh, yeah. That was
named,
the one.
Named after the developer.
I believe it's still out there, actually.
Yeah, I think they kept it, but I really don't care enough to go look.
Nah,
that's six letters in a domain that I have to type in that I really don't care about. So I've been hearing that Google Plus is getting the rollback soon, so that's not going to be it. I don't know. We'll see. There's stuff out there.
Yeah.
I do want to have, since you're a little ranty bit was kind of wussy there.
Yeah,
I want to talk a little bit.
I
want to talk a little bit about open source.
It's like, Facebook gave me a little slap on Monday, but then I got some chocolates on Wednesday, so I'm okay with them again now.
Okay, well, they'll fist you again on Sunday when you're not looking.
I know. I'm in an abusive relationship. It's fine.
Bring some lube because they don't any at all. So I've been looking at this open source issue with what happened with Heartbleed and OpenSSL.
Yeah.
I always say SSH instead of SSL. I don't know why. I'm an idiot. But anyway, looking at how simple it was for one programmer to basically drop trow on the entire internet without anybody knowing, mm-hmm. I've kind of put this out there before with bad guys getting jobs at Apple and Google, like working on Android, working on iOS, building in backdoors.
Yeah.
Open source is even easier. I don't know why I didn't think of it sooner.
Sits at home.
Yeah, you don't even have to apply for a job. You just show up and give them some code and say, "Here, I made you some code. It works. Trust me. it no go boom." So, if I was in the Russian mob, Ukrainian mob, any mob, if I was a bad guy, I would be having my guys build out many virtual identities, getting into these open source projects mm-hmm. where there is the biggest room for exploit and submitting good code. I'd take like a year or two, have my guys just submitting good code, actually, mm-hmm. working with it, learning the software, figuring out the vulnerabilities, and then one day just say, take them, start putting in backdoors, putting in vulnerabilities that just kind of work their way out there. It's like a 5-year plan. It's a 5-year evil, villain plan. But yeah. I bet you that there are people out there doing it right now.
I'm sure. I mean, just a WordPress plugin alone. There you go. Good luck.
Yep. I mean, there's the one thing, Tim Thumb that was used by every other plugin, which wasn't even a plugin. It was an add-on that somebody wrote for plugins to use, mm-hmm. left you, pants down, ankles grabbed.
Yeah.
And this is the problem with open source is that there's so many moving parts. So many people are involved now that yes, the theory is that there's more eyes on it. It's more trustworthy because there are more eyes on it. There are more people checking it. But if that's the case, why the hell did this OpenSSL bug ever make it into the wild?
Oh, because that isn't the case, as we will discuss in our comment of the week section, thanks to a link that was sent to us that described the reality of programming to a T. And that is definitely what happens in these open source situations.
Well, I think we should get to it.
Let's get to it, then.
Comment of the week!
Our comment of the week comes from friend of the show, Kevin, who sent this link to us via email this week. He had a little comment saying, I think this is right up the grumpy old geek's alley. You need to read it. The folks over here have been laughing, then crying, and finally we're all going to go get drunk. It's very true. His company deals with programming on a level that's a bit higher than even what you and I, Jason, ever kind of deal with. So for them, this really struck a chord. This is a the link will be in our show notes, stilldrinking.org/programming-sucks.
I love the domain.
Yeah, still, yes, it's a great domain. This is a fantastic article on the job of being a programmer. Not the kind of, you know, the platonic ideal of what programming is, but the actual real nuts and bolts reality of being a programmer. And it defines it to a T. It's worth a read. If you don't know anything about programming, but you have to manage us programmers, you need to read this. If you are a programmer and you've had that night where you can't fall asleep and you're sweating in bed because everything is breaking and you want to tear your hair out and you want to die, you need to read this. You should just read this.
If you're on the internet, if you're listening to this show, you're pre-qualified to read this article. And end of story. Okay.
Yeah.
And I was just, my jaw was on the floor because it's the horrors of programming are so eloquently put in this article. Mm-hmm. And I just want to read, two sentences, or maybe this is even one sentence, but it's so good. It could be seven.
Right.
All programmers are forcing their brains to do things brains were never meant to do in a situation they can never make better 10 to 15 hours a day, 5 to 7 days a week, and every one of them is slowly going mad. Yep, that's about it. That sums it up.
That really is about it. My particular favorite bit, because I tend to deal a lot now because I'm running my own company with the teams of people, with my clients that have teams, and that first opening paragraph where he extrapolates the aspect of being a programmer to the real world, to building a bridge where there are 18 people who have no idea what they're doing chiming in with their opinions and you have to take their stuff over yours because it's a team, damn it. That resonated so much it made me really want to cry.
Yeah, fortunately, I don't have that particular problem because the clients I'm working with, the very few clients I have left, they let me do what I'm supposed to do, which is great.
You have the dream situation.
Well, except they don't pay me for shit.
Yeah,
so I take problem. There is a trade off there. I can have gruel and mental stability, mm-hmm. or I can be insane and have a steak every now and again. and what does it say that I'm having the gruel? You know?
Yeah, okay. I got you. But the bit that really summed it up for me and why I brought it up when you were talking about the open source stuff is the fact that everybody, if you're not a real programmer, you think that all of these bits of code out there are so perfectly manufactured and we know what we're doing and everything is documented and boy, do we, you know, it's solid and it's an amazing thing that happens if something ever breaks. The reality is the entire internet is MacGyvered within an inch of its fucking life. Everything has so much duct tape on it. We don't know what half the code does. Most of the code out there that we have written, we know will break. It's only a matter of time. It's a miracle that anything actually ever fucking works. And that's the real internet, people.
Yep, that's it.
Yep.
You nailed it.
Yeah. There you go.
I've got some sites that ran for 10 years after I left them, and those are the few exceptions that I was just like, whoa, okay, well, I'd spend a year on it and then it would keep working.
Yeah.
Even though it was working and not making any money because the project was shut down because they spent all their money on PR and flyers and stuff like that.
None of the money ever goes to actually fixing the real stuff. That's the thing that really kills me, especially there isn't a single site that I have out there right now that I wouldn't want to go in and start to fix things on. There are things that I know are just hanging on by a thread. And especially nowadays when we're programming, we're always so much relying on third-party APIs. We're relying on social network plugins. We're relying on code that we don't even control. We don't know when it changes. unless we're paying close attention or we're signed up to a mailing list, and hopefully that email that had the important change to the API didn't go into our spam folder, or we weren't busy that day, or we weren't taking 5,000 phone calls, so we didn't see that go away. And even if we do know about that stuff, try getting the extra budget to get that fixed. Good luck.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Everything is within an inch of falling apart all the time. Yeah. That's why I just love WordPress so much.
Yeah, whenever I get an email from a client screaming about how something actually didn't work, I feel like writing back and going, you're lucky it did work. I'm amazed it ever works. I'm just going to start forwarding them this article.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Welcome to the internet, people.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
That was a really good article. And
made our days.
Yeah, we'll have a drink over it when I'm in Toronto next week.
Flipping around Gizmodo this week, and I saw a great little piece on Brazil's World Cup logo. Mm-hmm. And it really looks like Captain Picard doing the famous face palm if you look at the logo. And I'm like, actually, it does. I thought that was pretty cool. And since you're the big World Cup guy, I'm World Cup adjacent. I enjoy watching it when it's on, not at 3 a.m. But right. I thought I'd send this to you and get your take on it.
I have a couple thoughts. First off, you're definitely right, and the Gizmodo article, which is linked in our show notes, does a fantastic job of taking a shot of Picard and then putting the hand from the that is holding up the soccer ball right onto Picard's face. It's perfect. Very good chuckle. The World Cup has traditionally had awful logos. In fact, I just if there's one thing America does really well, we do good logos for our sporting events and for basically just about everything. If there's something the rest of the world does horribly, it's this.
Ahem, Washington Redskins?
Well, not, you know, we miss sometimes.
Okay.
But in general, you know, our logos tend to be pretty good, while the rest of the world's logos, I mean, go back and look at any of the Olympic logos for the past couple of years in all these countries, and they're absolutely ridiculous. You know, we've got your American Idols, and then Europe's got Song Vision, which, you know, YouTube that and enjoy. It's just we do a better job at logos. This is a horrible logo, but I find it incredibly appropriate because given the state of the infrastructure in Brazil and how fantastically high the possibilities of violence are, I find it very appropriate because I think this is going to be a face-palming situation. I think the experience of the Olympics in Sochi is going to be nothing compared to what people experience when they go down to the World Cup in Brazil. I think journalists are going to be taking lots of photos of things. I think that there is a high probability that there being riots in the slum areas of Brazil. They're already happening now and trying to be quelled. Every other day there's news reports coming out about violence in the streets. And as much as I harp on about the inequality and the shrinking middle class here in the U.S., things are much, much worse in Brazil. It's going to be ugly. That's my official prediction. And just to point out what's going on, we were talking just a few minutes before we came back on. You weren't even aware of this, that Brazil actually has the Olympics in 2 years as well.
No, I didn't. I had no idea.
Yeah, they have the World Cup in a month. They have the Olympics in 2 years. And the news report that came out today, Olympic official, Brazil's games are not ready in many, many, many ways. And this is 2 years from now. This is for the Olympics. The vice president of the International Olympic Committee has called the delayed, disorganized, and controversial preparations for the 2016 games in Brazil the worst he has ever experienced. They are expressing severe doubts that Brazil is going to be able to pull off the Olympics 2 years from now, in which they will be using a lot of the same stadiums that they are using for the World Cup and the same infrastructure, which starts in a month. So how do you think that's going to go? There are reports out that are unconfirmed that say a lot of these stadiums that they're using for the World Cup are not done yet. They start in a month, people.
Yeah, that's funny. I'm thinking of the first, I was thinking when I heard that you said that the Olympics were going to be there, I'm thinking, oh, like downhill skiing, and we could, like, you know, put snow on the favelas and have them just ski down the slums.
No, it's the summer Olympics.
Yeah, yeah. So they can run from drug lords. Mm-hmm. That'll be the 300-meter run for your life.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think
that and if you don't know what the slums look like in Rio, go watch the new Hulk movie, the one that has Eddie Norton in it. Mm-hmm. The beginning of the movie, or close to the beginning, has some pretty good scenes in that slum, so you can get the scope of it.
Yeah,
it's so huge.
It is huge, and it's scary, and it's frightening. And the face palming logo is very, very appropriate. It's going to be a mess. I just hope that the World Cup goes off without too much of a hitch. It is the premier sporting event in the entire world, and it would be a shame if it's if it just fucks it up. So,
well, here's the deal: after the last World Cup, no vuvuzelas, I'm in. So we at least can get rid of the goddamn vuvuzelas.
We've had a World Cup since then without them.
We have?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the you know what? I was so scarred from the one one with those that I didn't even pay attention to it.
Okay.
But at least, hey, if it's in Brazil, it should be in our time zone, right?
Yeah, close. But because it is the World Cup and it's an international event, they will be messing about with the times a little bit to be Europe-friendly. So the games will mostly be at 9 a.m. Pacific time and 11 a.m. Pacific time. So better for you.
Dude,
so
that's perfect noon and for me.
Yeah, that's perfect for you. So
sweet.
But much better than the one in Japan when I was up at 3 in the morning or whatever. So.
So Netflix is moving into the cable market, which is interesting.
It is interesting, but not surprising.
So what's going to happen now is Netflix cut a deal with three small cable channels to get their – basically their app installed in cable boxes so people don't have to get a secondary box.
Right.
Which is, you know, I think
smart.
It's great.
It's a very smart move for the cable companies because it will bite into why would you get an Apple TV or a Roku or something like that as long as if the stuff is just built right into your one box. So –
here's the deal, though. Here's the deal, though. These are with Joe Podunk Cable in Poughkeepsie, wherever. I don't know where these places are. There's the total subscribers that this is going to reach is 500,000.
Yeah, test run.
So hopefully it will go up from there because 500,000 people in a country of 300-plus million is, you know, less than one-third of 1%.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that kind of shakes out. But it's, you know, for them, it's good that they're making inroads there and playing nice with cable because it's, you know.
Yeah. We'll see. Because it's basically at the end of the day, there's no difference between all these different ways of sending in the content. So it's good to see that they're making an inroad, and it'd be nice to just have one box in the future.
Well, it's never going to happen.
I know.
No, never ever going to happen.
Never ever going to happen.
And a thing that was going around this week too with Twitter, I got my new profile picture page and everything.
I did as well.
Really, it makes no difference to me because it's only on the profile page. It's not the page where I read my tweet, so I don't see what the point is.
Yeah.
honestly, I never see it, so I don't know why they're making a big deal out of it. But Dick Costolo was on NPR this week talking about why their stock prices are in the shitter, even though that they've made $250 million that last quarter. They've got 255,000 users, which means that's about $1 a user,
right?
You know. And what they're planning to do going forward and how they're going to like start taking out some of the plumbing. So you can have a conversation with 8 people on Twitter without having to use the usernames as part of your 140 character limit.
Right. Can I ask a really stupid question?
Sure.
Why not just get rid of the stupid 140 character limit that existed only because back when Twitter was first created, there was 140 text character limits on some providers on ancient phones?
I'm sure that conversation happens every single day at Twitter. The main reason could be around, you know, emerging markets in Africa who have 140 characters. Sure. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. That makes no sense. I mean, perfect.
Maybe because Kim Kardashian can't form a thought bigger than 140 characters. They don't want to kill the golden goose.
I get it. I mean, it's just funny to me because they're making all these little changes to get around the fact that there's only 140 characters available in a tweet when they could just up it. And I'm not saying up it, you know, don't create an endless limit. Don't create a super high limit. Don't create any sort of limit that allows Kevin Smith to type all he wants to type in his fucking tweets. But we could double this. And that would solve a lot of the problems. And sure, of course, take out the tagging out of people's character limits. The problem with that is when, you know, is spam. Because then all of a sudden everybody's just going to be like, at everyone, you know, buy my book. or listen to our podcast. And then we could actually tag everybody in our podcast that we talk about.
Instead of having to do multiple tweets and all 4 people that have follow us, unfollow us. Okay.
Exactly. So it's a bit silly to me. The thing that was even just more interesting to me is that we really are living in I would never have guessed that we're living in a world where the CEO of Twitter talking about taking at tags out of the 140 character limit makes the financial news.
Well, I think it – no, the financial news part is the fact that their stock is in half.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that's the financial news part. And they're just asking him, what do they think that they can do to pull out of the slump? So he's just saying what their roadmap kind of is and, you know, what's it going to take? How many new users do they have to onboard that season to actually have a robust number for the stock analysts?
Right.
And which I really couldn't give two flying fucks less. I am out of fucks to give about that. So I was actually more, you know, interested in what the roadmap was. The financial side of it, like I said, I'm all out of fucks.
Okay. Well, in other Twitter news, they also announced that they're going to unveil or work on a what they're calling a whisper mode, which I guess just makes your tweets private as opposed to using the DM feature, which is already built in.
Tell me when it's launched. Don't tell me what you're going to do. We've been over this when we got the thing from Mammoth that said, hey, we're going to be doing some cool stuff. Tell me when it's done. Speaking of that, Foursquare this week, they're pivoting and they're breaking their app in half. Because it's Foursquare, and also
does anybody
no fucks to give.
Yeah, does anybody use this anymore, Foursquare?
I got three drunken friends who go out every night and post what bars they're going to. That's about it. Okay. So the new app, they don't even have to check in. They can it's called Swarm. Mm-hmm. The Verge did a really good video explaining with Den's douchebag. Talking about what the plan for the company is, all the data points they have, and the other dude who I have no idea who he is, talking about what the plan for the company was.
Right.
If you haven't guessed, I really don't care for the C-level executives at Foursquare, but that's a totally different story. What they're planning to do with the splitting of the apps is, you know, Foursquare it proper is going to take on Yelp. Swarm is going to take on who cares? It's not out yet, so I can't play with it. But all this press is out about it, and they're like, give us your email address, and we'll let you know when it's ready. I'm like, no. So
yeah.
When it comes out, tell me what it is. Same thing with your Twitter whisper mode.
I would not be unhappy if Foursquare came in and actually did something relatively cool to challenge Yelp. I think Yelp needs to be challenged. I think Yelp has good data, but shitty user base, shitty interface. I'd love that. But if this feels like a dead company reaching out and trying to hold on to something.
Oh, they're definitely that. But, you know, they're going to try and leverage all that data. And
they have a lot of data, but it's outdated already, too, because the real data that they have, people stopped using Foursquare 2-3 years ago.
But really? they still have their location database, which is very valuable data.
Right.
Like an actually, you know, that is seriously valuable data, and it's theirs that, mm-hmm. you know, they spent the money to get into their databases from their users. They didn't buy it. It's, you know, hand feet or boots on the ground, as it were. And I think that is key in going up against Yelp for sure, because most of the people are just trying to take Yelp's database and recreate it.
Yeah.
But I think that's their only play. They should have just thrown the Swarm shit away. Go up against Yelp, period. That's it.
Okay, fair enough. So let's quickly talk about a story about something that actually does exist that isn't a press release about what they will be doing.
Well, we still can't buy it, but it does exist.
Let's
caveat that, yeah.
Yes, and there's more than a few roadblocks before it could ever get real. But the Google self-driving car already drives better than you do.
Pro tip, you can't say pun until you tell them what the fucking story is first.
I know. Hey, I'm stuck in this weird future time thing that we'll talk about a little bit later.
Okay. Continue on driving cars.
Yeah, it's just a very long and interesting article about how well Google self-driving cars are actually doing in real-world tests. Sounds fantastic. I love this, but I think this is going to be harder to sort out than getting automatic weapons out of a fucking Montana logger's hands.
I am waiting for this day with bated breath. I hate my car. I hate driving.
See, I'm surprised by this because I thought you would take the I want to be able to do what I do when I want to do it approach and actually not like the Google car. Because the reality of these Google cars being out there means there should be no more self-driving cars. You need to have them all being run on a system. You can't have somebody going willy-nilly around.
Uh-uh, no way. You're still safer in one of these.
Yeah.
Period. They don't get tired. They react faster.
But you are not thinking about the lawsuits here that Google would have to take on if they get hit by someone who isn't driving one.
Okay. Well, let's forget that for a second. Let's go back.
Let's forget law.
Yeah. I want to forget that for a second. I want to talk about you brought up a point and asked me about why you thought that I would be on the other side of the argument.
Okay.
When I was younger and loved to drive, there were less people on the road.
Yeah.
there were less distractions in the car. The biggest distraction we had in the car when I was growing up was a cup holder. Okay?
Radio. We had radios.
Radio, but you didn't change. You didn't change the station. You know what we had? We had five buttons on the radio. When you find the stations you like, you pull out the button, you push it back in, and it remembers your radio. And then you press it again, and it takes you to the other station, and the little knobs turn. Now we've got people with movie theaters in their car. Okay, they don't do anything. But I mean, looking at the road is like 10% of what they care about.
Yeah,
and I want to get these people off the damn road. I do. Or give me a car that's smart enough to stay the hell away from them, get around them faster, the whole nine yards, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Driving nowadays is not nearly as fun as it used to be for me because I'm worried about everybody else. Because I'm hyper-vigilant when I drive, and so it just drives me nuts.
Driving is not only not fun for me anymore, it is actively frustrating. I had to drive into Hollywood yesterday for a meeting.
And oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I am sorry.
And I don't – a lot of it is the distractions, but then I'm also just going to pull out the card that I always pull out now. It's the narcissistic fucks that are out there. It's this next generation. They don't give a fuck. I don't think that they're I would love to see what driving lessons are like or what a drive – you know, do they have driver's ed anymore? Because they don't seem to.
I'm going to counter you there. These people are not – they're not driving being narcissistic, thinking about being narcissistic. They're thinking about – they're bored out of their skull because they don't enjoy the process of driving, and it's the least thing that they care about. So what they're going to do is look at something else. Yeah, I don't – I do not see a correlation between narcissism and being a stupid fucking driver.
I do not. Okay, I do, because here's the difference. Here is what I see happen, and it happened to me 7 times yesterday. Back in the olden days when you and I were driving, if we missed our left-hand turn because we were in the far right-hand lane and we came up on the street and we were supposed to make a left there and it was too late for us to get over, what did we do?
Went around the block, made 3 rights.
Exactly. You know what people do now?
Cut all the way over.
Cut all the way over. Don't even look and see if anybody is coming. And they just pull over because you know what? That's the direction that they want to go, and fuck you. Well, that is how people drive now.
Yeah, that's
just not just the Prius drivers, although mostly, almost.
Yeah, that's just a sign of an asshole. I don't see that as I've been with people who don't have a narcissistic bone in their body. They're just inconsiderate assholes. There's a thing about inconsideration and me being, you know, better than everybody. They just don't see anybody else in the world except where they got to go.
Right.
And there's a lot of people like that, and they're the last people you would ever see taking a selfie. They're just assholes. Okay. There's the asshole factor. Maybe that'll be the name of this episode, the asshole factor.
Yeah. But anyway, I see a lot of that. I see people doing whatever the hell they want. So,
but that's why I'm looking forward to a self-driving car.
I am as well. I would like to have the self-driving car with the option to switch it off so when I can basically have it turned on to get me all the way outside of LA, and then as soon as I'm like out on the 10 on the way to Palm Springs, I can switch the damn thing off and step on the gas and enjoy a good drive.
There's two sides to this. One, you're not going to own a car. You're going to hire a car. Right. You're going to get your smartphone out and you're going to say, I need a car. And dispatch will send you a car that they own because it's not going to be cost effective for normal people that don't have to drive all the time to own a car when they can just get a self-driving car that's delivered to their door when they need it and it goes back when it's done.
You know, that's
used by somebody else
That sounds absolutely lovely. And I'd love the fact that Google will disrupt Uber.
As far as the automotive industry goes, they can disrupt whatever the hell they want. But there are other people than Google that are coming out with self-driving cars. So that's the upside of it.
Cool.
And you blew me off on my second part. You know, it doesn't matter because that's the most important part to me, that you won't own your own car. You'll just hire your cars out. You're done. Oh, that was the other part. You said you can step on it. You know, you can get outside the city limits and step on it.
Yeah.
Self-driving cars will be able to go way faster than you or I could because you know what? They are faster. They can think faster. So the speed limits, if you're a self-driving car, will probably go up instead of down.
Right.
So especially when you get on freeway situations where you can get cars up against each other and draft and cut down on your gas mileage or make your gas – you know what I'm saying.
I hear you.
Get better gas mileage. So there's going to be there's a lot of different things that go into the mechanics of how driving works when we have automated systems that can do it for us. I'm looking forward to it. Please get it here faster.
I can't wait for Goober.
Goober. You've been waiting for 4 minutes for me to finish to say that.
Pretty much. That's all I had. Moving on.
Security.
So that whole bit about how the entire internet is just this strung together, MacGyver taped and you know, zebra gummed thing proves again and again, and I think I've been saying since at least 15 podcasts ago, we all better get used to sites being breached every couple of weeks and everybody's information being stolen. It has happened again, although I don't really know anybody who still has an AOL account. AOL acknowledges security breach, contacts, addresses, encrypted, passwords exposed. Although probably everybody on the internet that's been around for a long time probably still has some old AOL.com email account somewhere, so hopefully you're not using the same password you're using 20 years ago.
Yeah, here's the thing about that is this comes back to when you get rid of services or just let services kind of expire and go off into the ether. You probably still have some of your old info in that database.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it's four houses ago and whatever, but yeah, and a credit card that expired in the 90s. But, mm-hmm. you know, everybody at some point had an AOL account unless you're
– Yeah.
Oh, wait. No.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
We're old.
But the main point, again, being it's another week, another big security breach. This is going to keep happening, people.
It's going to happen every week. Just get used to it.
Use a password manager. We recommend 1Password. Especially very important. You and I have both been harping on about this. When you are leaving a service or you're consciously aware of the fact that you're basically just not using a service anymore and it's dying a slow death in your life, ask them to remove all your data.
Have a conscious ungrumping and get away from that source.
Exactly.
And and also on the 1Password side, they did release that another big update for we mentioned the iOS update on the last show. Mm-hmm. This week they have a platform update for Windows and you know, the rest of us, the Mac users. Where they built in like Heartbleed checks and things like that. So you can do checks with their system that'll tell you if something is still vulnerable to Heartbleed. The one problem I had with it is I checked a couple of my sites that were not affected by Heartbleed because they had not been updated in so long. They were running the old versions of OpenSSL that weren't vulnerable.
Right.
So I wasn't required to go and change my certs.
And it didn't do a smart check to see that it was an old version that wasn't affected.
It has no introspection on that whatsoever.
Gotcha.
It cannot tell if I'm running .9.6 or whatever.
It just knows you haven't updated.
Right.
Gotcha.
So that is a little bit of a red herring, I guess.
Gotcha.
That's the term.
Yes, I believe it is. So, yes, get 1Password, people. Get used to these breaches. Another big article caught my eye. I used to religiously watch 60 Minutes, but it's kind of been banished to especially like Saturday Night Live to basically YouTube viewing of the clips that everybody seems to like.
That's too bad. It's actually really good. I still enjoy it when I catch it.
Yeah, I just don't know what happened. I think just, you know, it's just one of those things where I used to make a point out of always being sure to watch it, and it's just kind of dropped off the biosphere for me. But this clip did pop up all over the place, particularly, again, I found it on Slate, which did a little article about it, why U.S. nuclear missile silos rely on decades-old technology. Apparently, Leslie Stahl from 60 Minutes went to a Wyoming nuclear control center for a segment that aired two Sundays ago, I believe now. And this is absolutely true because she just found all the old technology that they use. And I went when I did a cross-country trip about seven years ago now, somewhere outside of I believe outside of Phoenix or Arizona or something like that, they have an old nuclear missile facility that they let you go in and tour. And I remember going in there and just seeing like the gigantic box servers and the tape machines and all that crap. That's all what they still kind of really use.
Well, yeah, I saw this. You sent it to me, and I immediately got on the horn, as they said back in the day, to our old friend of the show, Dr. Teeter, who was a nuclear expert on things like this. Yeah. And I said, should we be worried about this? And he says, we're launching nuclear missiles, not playing Candy Crush. The programmatic requirements are simple. The main thing is that the systems be resistant to acceleration, shock, and electromagnetic pulse. The hard thing is finding replacement parts as things break down. But, you know, these things are meant to be hardened systems. It's not – you don't want to run a nuke on Android.
No.
Hell,
no,
you don't want
– open source.
You don't want to run a phone on Androids.
So. No, I totally understand that, and that actually makes a lot of sense. And the funny thing about the technology kind of being so outdated is it is more hardened now. It's harder to hack this stuff because it's so goddamn old. is funny stuff. But the interesting thing, though, that comes with that is, you know, that the government will eventually either have to outsource to a company that will solely exist to create things like old floppy disks, and then that becomes a point of vulnerability.
That no, that you know what that is, my friend. Mm-hmm. That is a market opportunity. That Let's get on this shit. Let's go find those old floppy.
Because we know what those government grants are like. If they'll pay $800 for a toilet, imagine how much we can get for a 5 1/4 floppy.
Speaking of toilets,
see what I did there?
I said, hey man, this is a group effort here. You threw up the ball. I alley-oop it.
Yep.
There was a. What the hell was this? It was the ACM Conference on Human Factors in Computing, or G. I don't see how. Okay, wait a second here. ACM Conference on Human Factors in Computing
becomes
Chi. Okay.
I'm not following that one either.
Okay, well, there was a company at this conference called Quantified Toilets, and they introduced smart toilets that could examine your stool and give you bio info on them. It was a total hoax, but people bought it, and it's interesting. It was an interesting thought experiment. So we're going to put it in the show notes. Go make your own conclusions on it. But I thought it was a fun article, and I got to put the other one in. This is not even the good article that we've got here.
I'm actually bummed to find out that it's a hoax. I actually don't think that this is necessarily a bad idea.
I see what you did there. You're trying to get that pun back in from before.
No. It's quite serious, though. I'm not surprised that this isn't in existence. That'd be
not
great.
Not yet.
Well, somebody will actually do this.
Well, here's the thing. I doubt that. I seriously doubt that. The fact that it was in the convention center was the funny part. That was where the surveillance part came in. I mean, if you had one in your home, but that's still going to be – it's going to be like Siri for poop, you know, squirty or whatever.
You need more grain.
Yes. Go to the emergency room immediately. So it's in the show notes. And by the way, the show notes for this episode will be at grumpyoldgeeks.com/56. Episode 56.
Crazy.
The F8 conference was going on this week. Yeah. Tell me what you really think there. Okay, shut the fuck up.
All right.
the lovely people at Facebook talked about introducing anonymous login and an updated Facebook login for sites to use Facebook login.
Now, I would like them to announce anonymous Facebook, where none of my information is shared with anyone.
You mean the rest of the internet? Okay. All I've got to say about this is the apps might not know what you're doing, but Facebook is still going to know what you're doing. You log into Tinder with it, they're still going to know you're trying to get laid. Okay. What I have a problem with is people that are still using other people's systems for their own login and auth systems. Stop it. If you're a nerd and you're listening to this, stop it. You have no excuse whatsoever. to do that. I mean, yes, it makes onboarding people a little bit easier for you and for them. But what it does is it fucks you in the long run, and it fucks them because it ties them into not being able to get rid of their Facebook account.
Which nobody is doing anyways.
It has stopped me on numerous occasions, and it has taken me a lot of time. Remember 750 words? I was on with Buster Benson like back in the day when he only used Facebook auth, and I'm like, give me a goddamn way to get off of Facebook. He did, and by the time he did, I was done with the service and bored. But either way, he finally fixed it. But it creates lock-in. You don't want to create lock-in for somebody else's service that's not giving you any money.
That is true.
So stop it. And –
Silly people,
even though it says it's quote unquote anonymous login, you're still logging in with your Facebook credentials.
It's not anonymous.
Somebody knows what you're doing.
This information is being saved somewhere by someone. Don't you worry.
When logging in is you're tied to an account somewhere. There's no such thing as a fucking anonymous login. Sorry, break my teeth on that one. I need to take a breath.
Deep breath. Okay. Now talk about something that really is anonymous.
We talked about Tor before and the Tor project. Tor is the anonymous blogging – or not – Jesus Christ.
Browser.
Anonymous blogging, anonymous browsing technology that you – is where the dark net is and, you know, the Tor onion routers and all that crap we talked about. Mm-hmm. And I told myself that I wasn't going to do that this time when I just refer to other shows. Okay, Tor is the anonymous browsing technology that lets you bounce your signal through multiple servers and let it come out on the other side so it doesn't know the source.
Right.
They have now created an operating system called Tails. And it's, well, they've been working on it, and it's now out in 1.0. It's an operating system that you can put on a thumb drive even and boot from it. And it you know, when you're done, you sign out, everything goes away. It's an anonymous operating system. Sadly, it doesn't work for shit on a Mac yet. But if you've got an old janky PC, you're good to go. Or, you know, anything with – it's Intel processor-based, but there's some issues with the Macs on how they boot that only gives it a little bit of support, you know. So they're working on the Mac side of it. But I'm going to go check it out. I got a janky old laptop around here somewhere. I want to try it.
Right.
But it's only a gig, and it loads up on a thumb drive. So check it out.
Check it out if you're in the show notes. If you're super paranoid.
I just want to check it out for fun.
Yeah, you know? Just for fun.
Just think about it. If you're at Starbucks, you know, being able to just boot up and not and use the Wi-Fi and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Whatever.
Anyway. All right. So back to operating systems that people will actually use, and unfortunately, many people still are, and a browser. Here we go. So earlier this week,
Here we go.
Here's how quickly things change in a couple days. Earlier this week, the U.S. and U.K. governments warned that everybody should stop using Microsoft's Internet Explorer browser because a massive zero-day hack bug was found. And even though everybody else in the world that actually does this stuff for a living has been saying, please stop using Microsoft's Internet Explorer browser for about 10 years, the government's finally warned people. Microsoft very quickly leapt up and issued a fix, so that is out. And they even put one out for Windows XP, which they said they were going to stop supporting, which is kind of interesting. So basically, you can use Internet Explorer again, but please, for the love of God, don't.
Yeah, this is just another one that they found out of the tens of thousands of bugs in Internet Explorer.
Going back to the thing about programming earlier, Internet Explorer is probably the prime example of a bit of code that we'll never actually get to see, but must just be a fucking skanky-ass mess.
Yeah, between that, Flash, and PDF in Acrobat, those three things alone, if we could just eradicate those three things from the Internet, we would have such a more secure place for Grandma and Grandpa to download pictures of cats and their grandchildren.
Thank God for that.
I'm just saying.
I actually followed some of your advice and went back and listened to one of the podcasts that you recommended for once.
Gasp!
I know, it happens. So you talked a bit about the Adam Savage Project last week, and I subscribed and kind of went through and picked out a couple episodes and listened to them at random. I actually really enjoy it, although my opinion about him having basically two mini Adams sitting on the podcast with him still rings true. I wish that there was a bit of diversity on their particular cast, but overall, it's a good project. Good project, because that's what it's called. It's a good podcast. I really liked it, and there's one really good one that I was listening to because I've been doing a lot of home improvement stuff, and he spent an entire podcast basically talking about fixing things around the house. He had some really great advice, which you know, it's Adam Savage. This guy knows what he's doing, you'd think, in general. So he's got a lot of great advice about, you know, like a real, like, general kind of, this is what you should have as a toolkit around your house. If you have nothing else, get these couple items. And I wish I would have listened to that podcast before I moved and started doing all that stuff, because I eventually had to go out and buy them all one by one as I realized I needed them. So it's a good little bit if you are thinking about doing a bunch of home improvement or you just bought a place. Listen to this particular podcast. It's fantastic. And the best bit of advice on it at all is hire a plumber. Don't try to do it yourself, because even Adam Savage realizes that there is no consistency and no standards in plumbing whatsoever. Plumbers know all this stuff. They know exactly the part you need. You will go back and forth between Home Depot 8 to 9 times trying to find the right bit that fits in your particular bit.
Yeah, so you've said.
Yes. Well, so did Adam. So I
do agree with you on the two co-hosts. They could just have Adam talk for an hour or half an hour. I'd be fine with that. But they need them to, you know, bounce stuff off of.
Well, it's a one man talking podcast is never all that interesting. You always need somebody. So
hey, watch it. I got a new show coming out here.
Oh, you're doing a one man podcast. Okay.
Yeah, and hey, look at Hardcore History. That's pretty damn amazing. I got a bunch of podcasts I listen to that are one man shows.
All right.
Yeah, you got to work harder. And speaking of one-man shows, John Oliver has a new show, Mr. Britt from The Daily Show. And what the hell is his podcast?
Oh, my God. We talked about
it. We covered it. Yes. Covered it, and I forgot about it already.
Me
because
too. Well, he has a podcast.
It's very good. But I like his new show. It's called Last Week Tonight. They cover the news on Sundays from the stuff that happened the week before. And it is very, very Daily Show-esque. I mean, to the point where it's like, really? You guys had to do that? The interview segment they did with General Keith Alexander was prime Daily Show interview shtick. I mean, like prime. But I loved the show. I thought it was great. I was laughing out loud. You didn't like it.
I'm not saying I didn't like it. I think I might just be a bit burnt out on the genre. You know, the fake news format is kind of starting to grate on me a little bit. I like John Oliver. I don't know if I like him completely by himself. He, in particular, I found the show, and this has become funny from me sitting on this podcast, which is grumpy and angry. I found his show to be a bit too grumpy and angry for a full show. I liked him a lot as a segment on Jon Stewart on The Daily Show because there was a bit of that, because of the co-hosting factor, the fact that Jon Stewart was not grumpy and angry and that played off each other really well when they did segments together. It was a bit too much for me, and you know, if I'm already watching The Daily Show and I'm already watching the Colbert Report, do I need another fake news? I don't know.
Okay. Well, by the way, his podcast was called The Bugle. It just came to me.
That's right.
The Bugle. In a flash and a vision. I don't watch The Daily Show anymore, and I don't watch Colbert Report anymore.
Well, there you
because
go.
Because I got burned out on them. But when I watched this, I was like, this is everything I need in one chunk.
Yeah. And, I suppose if I didn't catch The Daily Show relatively regularly, I would probably like this. But for me, it's just all the. I feel like everybody that's coming off of The Daily Show is doing the same damn show.
I also don't know if this is fake news. He basically just rips the news a new asshole, and it's like, I don't know. It seems different enough from The Daily Show on certain points when he's just talking. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it, but the interview segment just really killed me. That it was such a ripoff. that part really just kind of got under my skin. Anyway, check it out. Make your own decision.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be doing relatively well in the ratings. And again, I do really like John Oliver, and I think that his shtick is funny. I just don't know if it works just by himself. But we'll see. Who knows? I mean, they might switch it around. They might change it up. It's only one episode in.
Or I was going to say, they've only got one episode. So.
Yeah, I've only seen one. So I actually found a new podcast this week, and I've been enjoying it quite a bit. It's called Girl on Guy with Aisha Tyler, who is a relatively well-known comedian. She's been often on the Adam Carolla podcast. And basically, you know, every comedian now has to have a podcast. They all do. But she is funny. She is dirty. And this isn't much of a plus for a podcast, but she is smoking hot.
Yeah, but also she's been doing it for like twice as long as we have, so
yeah.
no way that we can like, you know, throw stones there.
No.
Comedians, I think comedians should have a podcast because it's perfect for them.
It is a perfect format. But if you're listening to the Grumpy Old Geeks, you're probably going to like this. She is a serious gamer, so totally loses me on that stuff because she will talk about games and you can tell that she is intense about it and she will talk about it for a long time. She's also a serious sci-fi nerd. She's had on almost everybody that's ever been on Star Trek has been on this podcast at some point. And she's really funny and I'm really enjoying the podcast so far. One thing about the format that she does, you can basically just skip the first 10 minutes because that is all sponsors straight up for about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I can't abide by that. And we had that problem with Caleb Bacon's Man Show podcast, too. 7 minutes before he gets to the meat.
Yeah, it's just break it up, stick it up throughout the show. I don't care. Or, I mean, I guess it just makes it a bit easier because I basically just – I've started literally just skipping in 10 minutes and starting playing it from there.
Yeah, Nerdist has this problem now, too. They go like 4.5 minutes. I just listened to the Jim Henson edition of Nerdist, which was I'm sorry, Jim Henson. That would be a fucking trick.
That would be a good one.
Yeah, that would be really good. My wife killed me. No, the Brian Henson version because my friend Gigi's on that sci-fi show.
Right.
So I checked out the Brian Henson one because Brian and I got in a fight a long time ago.
Who haven't you gotten in a fight?
Seriously, man. That's That's my history. That's going to be my new podcast. Who do I fight this week? Yeah, that'll be it. The guy who likes to fight.
Exactly. No, I mean, talk about problems that we wish we had, though. I mean, this is because this is what the advertisers have realized that they need to do on podcasts is front load, because people don't necessarily make it all the way through. And this is one way that and the tracking really isn't there on podcasts.
Oh, well, No. This is up to her. She's selling pre-roll. You can sell pre-roll, yeah. Mid-roll, post-roll. Yeah. Okay. You always sell pre-roll for more.
Yeah.
The problem with doing 10 minutes worth of pre-roll is you're just diluting your pre-roll. So I think that like going forward, just to be an ad nerd, that's gonna bite her in the ass.
Yeah, you know, probably will. So
I'd say charge a premium for the people that you got, mm-hmm. and don't do more than two sponsors pre-roll. But yeah. Anyway, speaking of people who don't know quite how to do things with podcasting yet, VentureBeat, they have a new podcast called What to Think.
Okay.
It's got the host. One of the hosts is Jolie O'Dell, who is just speaking of smoking hot. Okay, so this is the Smoking Hot Chick review podcast.
She is so your type. No wonder you like her.
Told you. so anyway, the podcast itself is very freshman. Even though Jolie, I'd seen her on Twit several times, so I expected a little more from her. But on the first episode, she did the thing where they talk about the article that they're talking about, like everybody's already read it. We are guilty of that.
Yeah. We do that all the time. We eventually get around to explaining it.
We're doing a lot better at explaining what we're talking about before we talk. Hey, did you read that thing this week? Yeah, that was fucking great. Okay, next. They did that quite a bit in the first episode. And they did a bunch of other just, you know, only things that only podcast nerds would get offended at, like the fact that their show notes are terrible. They don't link to anything they talk about in the show. And it's a mess. I had to go back and listen to the first episode three times to catch a reference to an article about a thing that had a book in it, and I went and bought the book that we'll talk about in the next segment.
Okay.
So what they need to do is just to kind of step back a second and have whatever intern is doing the podcasting stuff fix it. It's not that hard. They can hire me. I can teach them in an hour. It'll cost you $500 an hour, but I'll teach you how to do it.
Yes.
And then they're good to go. I mean, I think that her and the co-host, they're editors at VentureBeat, and they show up at a studio, they do the show, and then they leave, you know? And it's only it's a half-hour show. It's good. The thing about the show is the guests are awesome. They've had two guests, two episodes. The guests are awesome. I highly recommend the podcast, besides the part that infuriated nerds like me who are into how the mechanics of a podcast work.
Gotcha. And so wait, now I'm just taking a look at the page, and I'm still. What exactly is it about?
That's the thing. They don't do a really good job of telling you what the damn thing's about.
Okay.
It says, editor in chief Dylan Tweeny and managing editor Jolie O'Dell give you all the talking points you'll need for the weekend's roster of dinner parties and soirees. Stupidest fucking thing. Yeah, These people are supposed to be writers. This
don't
is
really
terrible.
Know what they're talking about. So
here's the deal. And they don't give you anything that you need to know. They're kind of a pseudo wannabe newsy podcast.
Okay. Gotcha.
But they don't talk about that much news, which is great. Like the second episode, they barely talked about any news, which is fine. Get the guest in, talk about some of the cool stuff that's going on in the scene, get them out. It's short. It's easy to digest. I liked it. The fact that I listened to the second one after the first one was such a shit show. But even though the guest on the first one was really interesting. So they're getting really cool guests. I recommend it for the guests. So same with the other one. Skip the first 10 minutes, get to the guests, and then just go look at pictures of Jolie on her website.
If you're into that sort of pixie little blondie thing.
Oh, she's not. She's got black hair now.
Ooh, goth.
Yeah. fuck. Anyway, so... Now, speaking of, Californication is going away. I'm so sad. I meant to mention this a couple episodes ago, but nobody told me it was back on because I had to go visit our friends in Sweden because I'm on the road and I don't have Showtime wherever I go.
Mm-hmm.
It saddens me that this is the last episode or last season of Californication. I loved that show. Nobody else loved it.
I watched the first season. I enjoyed it, but I enjoyed it mostly because the entire thing is shot right around my house.
Mm-hmm.
So I like seeing all the locations and going, oh, yeah, I've been there. Or, boy, they made that bar look different. Certainly it had the boob factor, which was a definite plus. I just never really got into it. Like, I thought there was something interesting about it, but not enough to make me go back and ever chase it out again. So,
yeah, I loved it. I mean, just the whole Hank Moody character, I loved. Yeah. It was for me, it was just a fantastic show. This is season 7, so I can see why they're going. You're going away with it, but
that's about enough for
last season. But last season, the main guest character was Tim Minchin as this like crazy drugged out British rock star, and it was fantastic. It was a fantastic season. I loved it. So this season is definitely they're slowing down and they're going to start tying up things, I guess. So
gotcha.
But anyway, so that's all. That's what I got this week. Okay. I think that was pretty good. We got a couple of hot chicks and a British dude and
some podcasts about stuff
and shit about plumbers.
At the library. Ooh.
A one and a two. Okay. So
yes,
Serpent of Venice finished it. Fucking awesome.
I stayed up until 2 a.m. last night to finish it because I just couldn't put it down, and I just loved it. It was unbelievably funny. Yeah.
I was so sad that I didn't get to see Chris Moore. He was here 2 days ago in Chicago, and he was signing in Skokie at like 7 in the afternoon, which means it's like 30 miles from where I'm at through 3 interstates north of Chicago. I love your books, man, but I don't love it more than afternoon traffic and going to Skokie and back, okay? Next time, come to the western suburbs. Go to Naperville. That's where Cory Doctorow signs. Go to Naperville.
Or you could have had a signed first edition sent to you the day of release.
I don't care about the signing. I want to hear him speak. I want to meet him. I want to shake his hand.
I don't actually know if he does any talking at his things. I've never been to one. I hope he does, but I have a feeling he might be so big that he just sits and signs.
Every author reads.
Sweet.
Well, every author reads.
I cannot.
And he ain't that big.
Yeah, he is to me, man. I got to say, this book was kick ass. He's written some of my favorite books of all time.
Lamb is it.
Lamb right is the number one book. You just cannot beat that. It's the funniest thing ever. I was really starting to feel like I was a little worried thinking that he's just never going to get that good again. And I mean, these aren't as good as Lamb because Lamb is the best book ever. But the two Fool books he's written now are just Fool and Serpent of Venice are stunningly funny. Laugh out loud, practically crap my pants, intricate, intelligent humor mixed with just base stuff that catches you by surprise. You cannot beat it. It was just great.
The funny things about his books are the first time you read it, I think I laugh about a third of the time the first time. Then the second time, I laugh two-thirds of the time. Then the third time, I get every joke.
Yeah.
Because they're so complex.
They're nuanced and complex, and it's layer upon layer. And there'll be like a one-bit line, you know, 200 pages after the joke was laid out that unless you're really paying attention, you won't get. But yeah.
And there's so many characters, it's really hard to pay attention and keep up with everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, I read Lamb twice in paper in hardcover because the hardcover was a beautiful Bible edition. And then I listened to Fisher Stevens' audio version, and his audio version is still to this day the best audiobook yet made. It is fantastic. And I listened to that, and I got 10 times more jokes, and it was just fantastic. So anyway, yes, this is our Chris Moore dick sucking episode here.
Exactly.
So there's another book, speaking of body parts. You recommended a book called Asshole.
I did.
Or Assholes.
Well, I didn't so much recommend it as say, this looks really fucking funny and I should probably read this.
Yeah, it wasn't. It really wasn't.
Well, I bought it as well. And I've got to say, it is funny for a couple pages, but the shtick runs thin really quickly. And yeah. I just ended up putting it down because it was diminishing returns the further in I got, because it was kind of the same joke over and over.
I got it on audio, so mm-hmm. I listened to it. And I got three quarters of the way through, maybe 5/8.
Yeah.
And it was filled with chuckles.
Yeah.
Because, you know, hearing this you know, author keep saying asshole and all the other shit that goes with it was funny. But you got to the point where it's like it turned into a term paper, you know, like a really kind of uninteresting term paper for a college freshman.
Well, I mean, that is the joke of the book, is that it's supposedly a real scientific take on what an asshole is. And it's funny for a bit, but it's way too long.
It could have been half as long and it would have retained.
Exactly. It would have retained. It would have impacted more.
So – I got two books here that we're going to go through real quick because you know what? I'm joking to death.
Okay.
I won't be around for the next segment. first book, Man 2.0, Engineering the Alpha by John Romanelio and Adam Bornstein.
Okay. And Schwarzenegger with the foreword.
Schwarzenegger did the foreword. These are personal trainer dudes. This has some brotastic science in it.
Okay.
Skip the fucking thing. Period. Everything that's in this book was I've read in other books.
I was about to say, isn't this The 4-Hour Body by Tim Ferriss?
No, they actually poo-poo a lot of Tim Ferriss's shit.
Well, good, because I don't think a lot of his shit worked. So
what?
I don't think a lot of his stuff worked. So
I tell you what, neither of these guys' shits worked.
I didn't think that this would either.
This is going to be a segment in my new show, my one-man show that you said it was not going to be interesting. But I'm going to talk about these kind of things. And this book, they go into great detail for two-thirds of the book at the beginning saying how awesome it's going to be once you read the book. When you start to read the book, yeah, it's really not very awesome. And you cannot do this shit from a book. That's it. I'm going to say it right now. You cannot learn how to eat from a book, period. You learn eating by eating and observation and how you feel and not eating processed shit. Anyway, don't buy this book.
Okay.
Next thing was The Cold Hard Truth. You're Overwhelmed Because You Want to Be, which was an article in Inc. magazine, which turned me on to a book called Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time.
Mm-hmm.
The premise is that we do this to ourselves. The book itself, which I paid for and I got about a third of the way through,
mm-hmm,
goes off on so many tangents, and it's mostly about women in the workplace and the sex divide and all this other stuff, which I got no interest in it.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry. I really don't. I have no interest in the, you know, I was hoping it was more on a societal level.
Right.
You know, with the things that we do that aren't just work, but, you know, like it says, love and play. But it's saying that everybody is becoming distracted because they want to be distracted. But she never got to her point up to a third of the way into the book.
See, this is
where – and I put it down.
Yeah, this is where I get really frustrated because this just feels like that's not necessarily true. We don't choose this. This is a choice that society in general has made, and it's a very real system that we're living in now, and you cannot just step out of it. I cannot just choose not – well, I guess I can choose to not be affected by it, but in that case, I can also choose not to pay my rent because nobody will be choosing to hire me. Because
yes, Maslow did not choose his hierarchy of needs.
Yeah, this is a load of shit, and it's actually a much bigger subject that you and I have chosen to push off to next week's episode because we both want to talk about it at a much deeper level, and it ties very directly into some of the things that we will be discussing next week. This is a load of crap.
Yeah, it really is, and I just want to say, do not buy this book, no matter what. Okay. Same with Man 2.0.
Right.
It's both of them are just it. It's you know what it is? It's word poo.
The thing is,
that's all it is. Is a word poo.
This is the current trend in publishing right now. This kind of let's use technology and pseudoscience to create a whole new genre of self-help books because the old ones aren't selling. This is just technological snake oil.
Well, since you haven't read the book, I think you might be a little bit off there.
Okay.
But the point is, she is using a lot of scientific studies,
mm-hmm,
and meeting with a lot of experts. But I think that the experts are definitely off as well with some of their conclusions. Mm-hmm. The whole point of it is she can't find a path to get me from what the title of the book is, what the premise of the book is, to where I need to be to complete her argument.
Right.
So in – you know.
Well, I'm not talking specifically about her book because you're right. I haven't read that. This is just more a publishing trend that I have seen. There's a lot. I mean, basically both the books that you've decided to poo-poo here are there, and there are a ton more hitting the market every day now. Are these kind of like, we're going to use science and technology to make your life better? We have figured out the algorithms in the real world that will change your life, and in general, it doesn't do much of anything.
Well, the Man 2.0 engineering book, Engineering the Alpha book, was because these guys were on a friend of mine's podcast, and right, I listened to it. And this is one of those things where I have learned the hard way that when it comes to podcasting, not everybody really cares about the guests that they have on. They care about, you know, filling airtime.
Right.
And I asked my buddy, I'm like, hey, did you read this book? Because I'd like to somebody to talk about it with. You know, I'm like a third of the way into it, and like they haven't gotten to the shit yet. And he's like, hell no, I don't read the books. I just get them on the show. So, which for me is a big problem, because it's like, if you're trying to be an expert on a topic, do not put forward a topic that is just pure bullshit and snake oil.
Yeah.
Without doing your research. I mean, hell, my mom used to send me those stupid-ass right-wing email chains that she'd get around. And there was one from – I think I even mentioned this on the show before. She sent me a quote from Lee Iacocca that was like bagging on Barack Obama before the thing.
Completely taken out of context. And
I went and read the book.
Yeah.
Okay, I do that for a quote that my mom sends me in a random email. If I'm going to have a guest on the show, I'm sure as hell going to know what their position is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that people don't do that and have – you know, giant audiences. Maybe that's where I'm going wrong. Maybe we just need to have every asshole that we can find on the show.
Let's get the author of assholes.
Yeah, let's get the assholes guy. Okay, last one. I got a book called No Exit, Struggling to Survive a Modern Gold Rush. It's a 48-page ebook, costs $2 on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
This is the book that I was talking about from the VentureBeat podcast that it took me forever to find.
Right.
That the guest recommended. I'm going to have a verdict on it next week. But I just wanted to tell you what the book was that I found after having to go back and scrub through and find it. It's the story so far of a startup in San Francisco with two founders who are going through the hustle. And from I'm maybe like 10, 15 pages into it. Like, it's only a 48-page little ebook.
Yeah.
And so far it is point for point spot on. Apparently he said that the guy did this actually with a company and just changed the names. And I can feel it. I can really feel it, the struggle so far. And hopefully it will be just the normal standard failure story. So people can read it and go, and I will put my weight behind it and say, this is exactly what it feels like to get, you know, your hopes up, get screwed, get fucked,
right?
Get your hopes back up, and then just, you know, go home and cry on your pillow every night, which is the standard way of San Francisco. But
I'm actually probably going to read this as well. It's 49 pages. Why not? And I'm really interested in the subject matter. And I agree with you that I think that people need to kind of see what the reality is. And that's, I'm desperately hoping that Silicon Valley, the TV show, is going to be basically two seasons, and they're going to end with them just crashing and burning. Because that is the reality of 99% of the companies out there.
Well, we'll see. They did get picked up for season two.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, obviously they're being successful, so you're not going to make it a one season thing. But I do hope that they are going to end with failure.
No. You know what they're going to do in season two?
Hmm.
They're going to pivot to season three.
Okay.
Welcome to This Week in Shit We Put on Our Computers.
So I stumbled on an article on Boing Boing this week about they were digging through a landfill, I believe, in New Mexico. And there was always an urban legend, and I vaguely remember this from being a kid. There was an urban legend that a bunch of Atari ET cartridges were buried around the time back in 1982, around the time that the game came out. And apparently it was true, and they found it. So that was kind of funny. I vaguely remember playing the game. My parents would never splurge for a 2600. I was stuck with a fucking Odyssey. So I played it at a friend's house, and I do remember it being horrible. And Jason, when I sent him the story, his immediate comment was, that is the worst fucking game that was ever made.
Yes, Jason being me who you're talking to right now. But that's okay. Yes, yeah. I can be referred to in the third person. It was pretty fucking terrible. I mean, it was no Yar's Revenge, but yes,
I remember as far that as one.
The Atari 2600 games kind of they really started to die with Pac-Man. Mm-hmm. I remember my grandparents bought a 2600, and they were in the pre-order for Pac-Man, and I was waiting for it, and it got there, and we plugged it in, and we just all looked at each other, and like, what? I was like six, and I'm like, what's this shit? It was terrible. And E.T. was just as terrible. Blamed for the fall of the consoles.
Just a funny little story that they dumped all the extra stock, and somebody actually found it, so that was kind of cute.
Yeah, when the documentary comes out, I'll take a look at it for sure.
Definitely.
Now, I got a couple games. Well, I got one game for my iPad and iPhone. It was a Plus game, mm-hmm. a hybrid, whatever the kids call it these days. It's called Leo's Fortune. Mm-hmm. It's on the front page of iTunes, so I figure a lot of people have seen it. But surprisingly, none of my friends have played it, because in my game center, I always see who's got the games.
Right.
It's what you basically got here is a Russian tribble who got his money ripped off, and it's a side-scroller, and you're using your thumbs to travel him around and pick up his gold where there are obstacles.
Right.
Very pretty. Sound is funny. Skip it. Save your $5. It's really – unless you are into that kind of game that wants to make you throw your iPad through a window off the 95th floor of a skyrise, it's terrible. I get mad at it. It's pretty, but I just hate the gameplay. The whole thing about it is just making me grind my teeth. So, that's my Leo's Fortune review.
Okay. Well, I don't want to throw an iPad out the window because they're still quite pricey, so I'll just pass on that.
Next one is the best app I've probably gotten all year. It's called Authentic Weather. Have you seen this app yet?
I have seen this app because you have posted the screenshots on your various social networks. So I feel like I've kind of gotten the entire gist of it.
I'm loading it right now. It says fetching the fucking weather. And it says cloudy with a chance of dot, dot, dot. You thought I would say meatballs, right? Stupid. I was showing this to my dad yesterday as we were coming home. Hey, Sunday, fucking rain. Monday, partly cloudy. Go outside. It's great. It's 99 cents. You're gonna get probably $4 worth of value out of this.
Okay.
So I think all in all, it's a win. It's all a total win.
It's the grumpy old weather app.
Because right now, not that many people have it, so you're gonna be able to be at a bar and like pull it up and say, "Hey, look, fucking weather," and you'll get a pop from the crowd. Get it now. If you wait another week, maybe not. I'm just saying. Link will be in the show notes. Go check it out.
Excellent.
Last one, Delete It Later, which is another one of those services that I, you know, used to talk about where we could make an ephemeral web.
Yes.
You make your post and then it disappears.
Yes.
Stay the hell away from this one. It's at deleteitlater.com.
Yeah.
You have to, you do your sign in and everything. And I did it just because I'm the guinea pig. Looks very, very scammy. There's no info about the people who made it. And there's nothing you can find out about it. The blog has crap on it. It's one of those things where once you give it to them, then they have your keys and they can find out your friend's info. And it could just be a miner, like a site where they mine information.
Yeah.
So if you're my friend on Facebook, I'm sorry. they have your information now. But hey, what the hell?
Yeah,
we're all in this together.
This looks frightening. It looks janky. It looks scary. There's nothing professional about it. There's no information whatsoever. There is a $3 premium that you can pay monthly and cancel anytime. But it doesn't even tell you what the premium gets you on the page. This just reminds me of remember the explosion of the weird like applications that people were building for MySpace when MySpace was a thing, like go through and add friend finders and all that sort of shit, and where you just paid the money and the app worked for like about a day and then it just broke and never worked again. This looks a lot like that. I'd say stay away as well. I mean, just looking at it, I would never sign up for this. So congratulations, Jason.
Thank you. I'm glad that I could be your canary in the coal mine.
Well, thanks very much. And thank you for giving my information to them.
You're welcome.
All right, who's this asshole?
I was having a pretty grumpy week this week, and I was chatting around with a couple friends, and we were just talking about, you know, the things that I normally talk about, because I'm such a fun guy.
Beer and not getting paid.
And
plumbing.
Plumbing issues, the shrinking middle class, the decline and fall of Western civilization, all the sorts of things I normally talk about.
You actually go out and talk about the decline of the middle class?
I kind of do, which is bad, isn't it? Should probably talk about tits and stuff, but
yeah. No.
You know, you go out with me, you get a fun night talking about, you know, GDPs and that sort of stuff. Anyways, I was out and was having one of those conversations, and when I came home, I had a link waiting for me in my email from the guy that I was out with. We have the photo in our show notes. I will go ahead and explain it for those that don't want the visual payoff. I put it in the notes with no comment required, and then I said, actually, comment probably required. The photo is a shot of Snooki and it is a quote from, I couldn't tell you what show it was. I'm assuming it's from the reality show that was on, but it could be, I think that ended years ago, so maybe it's just some interview that she did. The quote is, "That's why I don't eat friggin' lobster or anything like that, because they're alive when you kill it." And,
no.
And then at the bottom, it has the caption, "Lobsters, the only animal that's alive when you kill it." And then the comment that I have is, I quickly Googled her, and on CelebrityNetWorth.com, she comes up as, she is Snooki, who thinks that lobsters are alive when you kill it, because it's only a lobster that is worth $4 million. She made $150,000 per episode of her reality show. We have no one to blame but ourselves, and this is why I can't stop drinking.
Okay. Are you drinking now?
No, sadly.
Okay.
I might after that, though.
Well, you know, this is why the world is not fair. So here's the deal. She had a show. You didn't. You should maybe go get a show and get the $4 million and just go talk like a moron for a couple of years and get spray tanned.
I agree.
And wear a bikini.
I don't know if you wanted to see, I don't know if you want to see that, but you know.
I did. Well, I can guarantee you I didn't want to see her in a bikini either, but that's why she's famous. So there's your answer.
There you go.
There you go.
Lobsters.
Oh, it's not dead.
And one of the more fun things that that crossed my path this week, a Policy Mike article. I've never actually heard of this site before, but I've actually looked through it a little bit. And I'm going to be bookmarking them and looking through them regularly. They seem to have some good articles and some real journalism. This is not a case of the real journalism on the site, however.
Thank you. Great preamble there.
Yeah. This is a great little article, a lot of fun. It's basically a listicle, but it's titled "Visual Confirmation That Most People Look Better with Tattoos," and some very, I don't know if this is one person that did this or not, but it's somebody with very, very good Photoshop skills went through, found old photos of older celebrities and basically tatted them up pretty extensively. Some of these are absolutely great. Like Marilyn Monroe, if she would have been a full-on suicide girl, would have been smoking hot. She would have been the archetype of the suicide girl. They did a great job with her. There's some misses in here. There's, you know, they did Jackie O, and she just kind of looks ridiculous.
Well, here's the deal. I'm going to tell you right now,
mm-hmm.
The same person did not do all these people.
Okay.
I know Photoshop inside and out. I can tell the skill that was on the first one
mm-hmm.
is excessively good.
Right.
The Jackie O and JFK tats, terrible. Elvis was pretty good. The Fight Club guys, They just pick bad tats. Audrey Hepburn, skill's pretty good, but she just kind of looks like shit with them.
Yeah, it just doesn't work on her.
Here's the difference. These are like taking dime store tats and putting them on. I mean, there's no cohesion with the tattoos themselves.
Yeah.
So it's just like putting ink on people. The Leonard Nimoy one's pretty funny.
Funny. The Bruce Lee one could be spot on. I mean, that whoever did that one actually did like the right kind of tattoos
good.
For him. Yeah.
I think my other favorite is Walter White.
Oh, that's a badass.
Walter yeah. White looks fucking badass. But I think that they had a couple different people doing these tattoos. It's maybe – actually, you know what? I'm looking through them. I think the only one that they didn't have the same person do is the second one, the JFK one.
Right.
That's the only one that looks really bad compared to the rest of them. Everything else is – you're right. They did do a great job.
Yeah.
But I think – yeah, I mean – Marilyn's the best. She's hot.
Yeah, she is smoking hot. And I've actually just found a bit of attribution. There we go. So they pulled all of these from a Tumblr called Shopped Tattoos. Shoptattoos.tumblr.com, which has tons more, some of which I'm just scanning now are really good and a lot of which aren't. And I'm about to start laughing hysterically because somebody tatted up a chunk from the Goonies.
I just like that. I like how you say I have found the attribution, even though it is the first line in the article.
Well, you know, you're always on about attribution, and you didn't say anything. So.
Well, I'm not the one that brought this up, you fucking dumbass. What you gonna do? Okay, Shop Tattoos going in the show notes. There we go.
There we go.
it's very good.
Yo, seriously? Are you shitting me?
And there's just a little bit of the great magnet going on this time with the Are You Shitting Me? Because I was reading the Serpent of Venice by Chris Moore, I came up with I Googled around and I found this one. The name Jessica was actually created by Shakespeare in the play The Merchant of Venice, from which, you know, obviously Chris Moore was heavily stealing from and playing on. The name was first used in this form by Shakespeare in his play The Merchant of Venice in 1596, where it belongs to the daughter of Shylock, also a character in The Serpent of Venice. Shakespeare probably based it on the biblical name Isca, which would have been spelled J-E-S-C-H-A in his time. It was not commonly used as a given name until the middle of the 20th century. So that is the derivation of the name Jessica. Interestingly enough, Chris Moore himself pulled this up, pulled up this exact bit that I pulled up, and has it listed as a footnote in his afterword.
Okay, so you could have just read the afterword and not had to go to Google it yourself.
Well, I did it before, though. I put this in early this week, and I just read the afterword to the book last night. So.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Wow, you actually read afterwards. That's cool.
Always. Yeah, well, as long as I like the book and I'm not throwing it in the trash. So.
Yeah. I didn't even get to the afterword for most of the books I said tonight. The interesting thing is, what's the name of the little hot blonde with the dragons in Game of Thrones?
Oh, damn it.
Well, her
hot,
name
is... Hot one.
Yeah. Hot one with dragons.
Yes.
MILF of dragons, I think that's what they call her.
The dragon MILF.
So people have been naming their children after her recently. So this is maybe that's the same thing as Merchant of Venice must have been pretty badass on the HBO of the day back in the 1596. That's where Jessica comes around. And now she's, you know, Jessica from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which... You know, it came in the news this week because we lost a great actor this week.
Yeah, well, and also, yeah, let's give a shout out to him, of course, Bob Hoskins, great actor. But just to come back on my little thing about Snooki, there's also the other famous Jessica Simpson, who also had problems with animals that we eat and asked if buffalo wings were actually
fish.
Made from buffalo.
Well, no, and Chicken of the Sea.
And Chicken of the Sea, is that a real chicken? So... Not a good history with the Jessicas, but there you go. That is the derivation of Jessica.
Closing shout outs!
So if you haven't picked up our app yet, it's going to be updated soon. So maybe get it now and it will auto-update on iOS if you've got that little gadgety thing flip that updates your apps for you. I just wanted to give a shout out to my buddy Trent Hamilton. We're going to put his URL in the show notes if are looking for an iOS developer. He's your guy. He's really cool. Did a bunch of stuff. I worked with him. I actually worked with him at a company called BLT. We did a bunch of movie stuff. We worked on the Muppet stuff together and some TV stuff. Guy used to be an amazing Flash developer and just changed tack and said, fuck Flash. I'm going to build apps.
Nice.
And that's all he's done for like the past 2 years.
He has pivoted.
And he's great now. So I just give the guy some fucking business. That's all I got to say. Pay him money and make him make your app. Now, other people that I know in the past from Hollywood and, you know, the land where I used to live.
Yes.
Ask a Ninja. This is breaking news. Beep, 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 as you did last time. Ask a Ninja is coming back. Woo-hoo. They're coming back. They're doing new shows and they're going to be redoing some of the old shows. They're going to basically, the old questions are going to go back and re-record them, I guess, because, I don't know, HD.
Shit changes.
The ninja gets smarter.
Yes. The ninja acquires skills.
So the guys that are behind it, Doug Sarine and Kent Nichols, are going to be doing a Reddit AMA tomorrow, which is Saturday. The show is going to come out Friday, May 2nd. They'll be doing a Reddit AMA May 3rd. So this will be dating the show, but the link will be in the show notes to their tweet, which will give you more information. But I am happier than a pig in shit because I loved Ask a Ninja. That was one of the first best web series along with them and Tiki Bar TV. And one of the reasons I hate Kevin Rose is he dated her, little bastard. but anyway, so this is like the comeback of a classic. So I'm excited.
Excellent. So, that sounds so very exciting.
Yeah. So I don't think anybody listens to this, but if you do, Don't fuck it up.
And I've got a dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee as well, as I just reloaded my browser as we're getting ready to wrap up. Guess what just happened again? Another major security hole has been found in a popular login protocol. OAuth is now in trouble.
Oh, no shit. Really?
No shit. Just reported right now in Yahoo News. Following the major Heartbleed security issue that affected millions of websites, a different vulnerability has been discovered that could have allowed hackers to steal certain personal data from users. CNET is reporting that a security flaw in the OAuth and OpenID online login protocols could be used to steal data and redirect users to malicious websites. Dubbed Covert Redirect, the exploit masquerades as login pop-up based on affected sites' domains. So we were just talking about all this stuff.
I'm gonna do a little follow up here because I remember this back in the day. Nobody uses it, so nobody's going to be affected.
Well, I'm sure there's quite a few people out there that are still using it. You'd be surprised at what people are using out there.
Well, I'll go do some research on it. I mean, I was a little off on the Heartbleed one, but OAuth has morphed to OAuth too. I remember when Chris Messina was doing this stuff way back when. Shit, I mean, it was like probably 2005, 2006 when I was up there. Yeah. And OAuth just kind of died on the vine because it was a little too complicated. You had to have your own URL. You had to be the master of your own domain.
Yes.
As it were.
I remember that as well. Mm-hmm.
So it never really got critical pickup, but yeah. I'll check it out. What the hell? I haven't used OAuth since it was in proof of concept.
And
guess what? Neither has anybody else.
Well,
this is like saying your CompuServe login has been compromised.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a reason it's being reported on the news, Jason. You may poo-poo it all you want, but obviously somebody out there thinks it's important.
Did you ever watch The West Wing? Do you ever hear about Fridays? It's called Garbage Day.
Okay. Is that why our podcast comes out on Fridays?
Keep up with the Grumpy Old Geeks on the web at grumpyoldgeeks.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/grumpyoldgeeks, or email them at podcast@grumpyoldgeeks.com. Have a good week.
Okay, last one to kill a bad guy buys the beer.
We're driving to Florida.